When J. Kenji Lopez Ault was in the fourth grade, he was given an assignment to write a book about himself. What would he become? His answer, married at 24, kids at 26, PhD at 29, and find the cure for cancer, and then be awarded the Nobel Prize. He would then leave science and spend the next 40 years as the president of Legoland. Well, there was a small change of plans, because that kid grew up to be intensely curious about the hows and whys of food. J. Kenji is the managing culinary director of SeriousEats.com and author of their award-winning column, The Food Lab. Lynn sat down with him to talk about his masterful new book, inspired by that column, The Food Lab, Better Cooking Through Science.
Kenji, it's great to have you with us.
It's so good to be on.
You know, I have to say, I usually don't rave about a book, but I have to say that if anybody cooks even once a month, this book would probably be a revelation to them. And I think a lot of it is not only the, I have no idea how you came to these conclusions. You had to have been working 24 hours a day for God knows how long, but also you make it so readable. Because often when you get into food science, you know, your eyes roll back.
Right.
I mean, I gather this is purposeful.
It is. You know, I grew up watching kids' science shows. You know, I loved science as a kid. I loved science classes. And so I think the best teachers are the ones that make the science interesting and make it sound like, you know, something just really cool, which is what it is.
Yeah. How do you work? Because you do exhaustive tests to come to conclusions that often go against everything we've ever been told. I mean, how do you work? How do you go through the process?
I work mostly from the hours of midnight to 4 a.m. in my underwear. And
That's a nice detail. I like that.
that's where the writing takes place.
But the
cooking work, you know, it starts off with a ton of research. You know, if I'm going to start working on a given recipe or even if I'm just thinking about a technique, it starts with research. So it starts with looking up all the classic techniques, looking in cookbooks, looking online, looking at other, you know, really innovative, smart cooks that I know and seeing what they've done with it. So it all starts with a lot of research. And then from there, I start to design a sort of set of experiments that I'm planning on carrying out. You know, but really just keeping in mind the end goal is to make food better, more efficient, always with the constraint that these are recipes designed for normal everyday people who are not going to be buying really fancy equipment or going to specialty markets to find, you know, exotic ingredients. And then from there, you know, you just poke and prod and experiment until you discover either that everybody's been doing it right the whole time or that, you know, maybe there are ways you can improve it. And often you find that there are ways you can improve techniques or recipes.
Let's talk about some of these, okay? For instance, your idea about cooking meat, you know, things that you would do in a skillet or on a grill.
Right. So traditional recipes will have you start fast and finish slow.
Right.
And I think that sort of stemmed from the idea that searing meat will sort of lock in juices. You know, how the idea is that you create this sort of cauterized crust on the outside and that prevents juices on the inside from escaping.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and it turns out that this has been proven to be untrue many, many times. It's actually very simple to prove it yourself. You know, you can sear one side of a steak, get a really nice brown crust, flip it over and let it cook. And eventually you'll start to see juices bubbling out of that seared surface. So, you know, quite obviously it's not actually sealed. You know, the other way you can test it is by searing meat first and finishing it slow and then doing the opposite, which is starting slow and searing at the end. And, you know, by doing this, what you find is that actually the meat that you sear, the one that you sear at the end, loses far less juices than the one that you sear at the beginning. And so that is a technique that I recommend for many things, you know, steaks, pork chops, hamburgers. I recommend it for, you know, if you're going to roast a whole chicken. It basically like any sort of fast cooking meat that you want to get a nice brown crust on. Starting it low and slow until it's very close to the final temperature that you're going to serve it. So, you know, for a steak, that would be, you know, you bring it up to around 110 degrees or so, and then you sear it at the very end. And by the time it's done searing, it's at around 125, which is like a nice medium rare. And, you know, the difference is that you get a very even cook from edge to edge. It's nice and pink all the way throughout, as opposed to a more traditional steak, which has a kind of temperature gradient where it's gray on the outside and transitions to pink in the middle.
Okay, microsteaming. Tell us about microsteaming.
Well, microsteaming, I mean, it's just a portmanteau. It's microwaving and steaming. You know, people are afraid of the microwave. And, you know, even the other day I was on Twitter and somebody mentioned, oh, you know, this restaurant must microwave all their food. And they were talking about one of these sort of, you know, big national chain restaurants. And, you know, and to me that was just like, well, you know what? Like, I've worked in restaurants like that, and most of those places don't microwave their food. But you know where they do microwave food a lot is actually at very fancy restaurants. And I think it's... you know, I think it's because a lot of, at these fancy restaurants, chefs maybe use a little bit more, you know, use a little bit more thought and realize, you know what, the microwave is just another tool. There's nothing evil about it. Just because most of the things people cook in it happen to be frozen dinners, it doesn't mean that it can't be used as a good tool for cooking real fresh food. So micro steaming is essentially you steam green vegetables. You can do green beans, you can do asparagus, you can do whole ears of corn, things like that. You know, you put it on a plate with a little bit of water, cover it, and microwave it, and it steams much faster than it would on the stovetop, and you actually end up preserving a lot more color and a lot more flavor. You know, I'm not a nutritionist, but I'm told you also preserve more nutrients that way.
And you save the pot of water and all of that.
Yes.
Cryoblanching.
Yeah. Well, cryoblanching is a thing that my friends over at Ideas and Food. It's a food blog that's been around since I think before food blogs even existed. They came up with this concept called cryoblanching. And essentially, you know, traditional blanching is when you'll take a green vegetable and drop it in boiling water, not till it's fully cooked, but until it's almost cooked, just enough that you sort of break down the cell structure. And from there, you can chill it and it's ready to go, you know, for dinner. Then all you have to do is quickly saute it. Cryoblanching is essentially you take those same vegetables, put them in a single layer, and then freeze them. And freezing, what it does is it'll crystallize the water molecules inside the vegetables. And those crystals have sort of sharp, jagged edges that end up puncturing and breaking cells the same way that boiling a vegetable will. So what it doesn't do is it doesn't alter the flavor. So you end up with a vegetable that's essentially blanched because its cell structure has been broken down a little bit, but it still has a very fresh green flavor. So you freeze your green beans in a single layer, and then when you're ready for dinner, pull them out, let them thaw, and then you just, you know, finish them in a pan with a little bit of butter, and they'll come out tender, perfectly cooked, but with a brighter, fresher green bean flavor than they would if you blanched them in water. And in addition to the green beans, you can actually also do this with other green vegetables like asparagus, fresh peas, snow peas, snap peas, you know, any sort of small green vegetable that's going to freeze quickly.
And then you could actually keep those, right? I mean, if you put them in a container, a sealed
container. Yeah, you can then transfer them to a freezer bag. And, you know, if you want to do it even better, you can use one of those vacuum sealer bags. Just seal the fresh vegetables in a vacuum sealer bag in a single layer and then throw that straight into the freezer. And that way, when you thaw them out, you can actually thaw them underwater and you don't risk waterlogging them.
Fascinating. Kenji, thank you so much. And good luck with the book.
Thank you. It was so nice to be on.
J. Kenji Lopez-Alt is author of The Food Lab, Better Home Cooking Through Science. You can find his recipe for butter-basted, pan-seared, thick-cut steaks, as well as his guide to pan-searing steaks at splendidtable.org.